Hello, Capital Region. This is the Hudson Mohawk Magazine on WOOC 105.3 FM, broadcasting from the Sanctuary for Independent Media in Troy, New York. I'm your host, H. Bosch, Jr.
And I'm your other host, Guy Schaefer. Today, we are talking with Albany County Legislator Bill Reinhardt about community cost aggregation, a system that could make renewable energy more affordable to more people.
Then in my segment on Triple E's Education, Empowerment, and Entrepreneurship, I'll be speaking with Celeste Hightower about her book, Big Baby for Jesus.
Afterwards, we'll have an end of the academic year recap of Youth Voices from Troy's ALP School 12 and the Sanctuary's Youth Radio Internship.
After that, labor correspondent Willie Terry will be speaking with Corey Ellis at the New York State Nurses Rally this past Monday.
And then we'll close out the show with Zachary Ahmad from the New York Civil Liberties Union about the 287G program that deputizes Rensselaer County police officers to act as immigration and customs enforcement agents. Now let's start off the show with some rapid-fire local headlines. On Monday, U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions reversed decades of litigation that allowed victims of domestic and gang-based violence to qualify for asylum in the U.S. His order came after refusing asylum to a Salvadoran woman who had been raped and beaten by her ex-husband for 15 years. This ruling is on top of last month's announcement of a zero-tolerance policy for illegal border crossing, which has seen at least 600 immigrant children removed from their parents last month and held in detention centers that have been described by many as inhumane. On Wednesday, 10 members of Congress protested by blocking the entrance to the headquarters of the U.S. Customs and Border Protection. Today, protesters gathered in at least 60 cities around the country to protest immigration policies that separate children from their parents. The protests, organized by the group Families Belong Together, reflect outrage over the Trump administration's immigration policies. Two protests took place this afternoon in the Capital Region, one at Leo O'Brien Federal Plaza in Albany, and another at Representative Elise Stefanik's office in Glens Falls.
Attorney General Barbara D. Underwood today announced a lawsuit against Donald Trump Foundation and its directors, Donald J. Trump, Mr. Trump, Donald Trump Jr., Ivanka, and Eric Trump. Petition the file today alleged a pattern of persistent illegal conduct occurring over more than a decade that includes extensive unlawful political coordination with the Trump presidential campaign, repeated and willful self-dealing transactions to benefit Mr. Trump's personal and business interests, in violation of basic legal obligations for nonprofit foundations, as alleged in the petition. Mr. Trump used the Trump Foundation's charitable assets to pay off his legal obligations, to promote Trump hotels and other businesses, and to purchase personal items. In addition, at Mr. Trump's behest, the Trump Foundation illegally provided extensive support to his 2016 presidential campaign. According to Attorney General Underwood, as our investigation reveals, the Trump Foundation was little more than a checkbook for payments from Mr. Trump to his businesses, to his nonprofits, regardless of their purpose or legality.
The New York State Police Crime Lab is analyzing DNA evidence using controversial techniques that have been characterized as junk science and have led to shakeups at other labs around the country. Times Union examination of records documenting the practices of the state's Police Forensic Investigation Center found the lab may be manipulating DNA analysis to match samples to known suspects in crimes, and that a national accreditation organization removed details of that allegation from an audit that was released in February. The issue centers on mixtures of human DNA recovered from evidence such as weapons or a victim's clothing. Scientists at some labs, including the State Police's Forensic Investigation Center, use a form of analysis called combined probability of inclusion that allows them to subjectively match up a suspect's DNA with DNA found at the crime scene. Florida attorney Tiffany Roy compared the practice to painting the target after you've already shot the arrow.
According to a report released by the New York State Comptroller Thomas DiNapoli, on Superstorm Sandy or Hurricane Irene could wreak havoc on the dozens of dams peppering the Capital Region. A risk to life and property should one of them fall. The region has 75 dams, either government or privately owned, that pose an immediate or high-risk threat of damaging the surrounding area if the dams were breached. Fixing the dams could cost municipalities $360 million. With little federal funding available, DiNapoli said in a news release, the deadly and destructive consequences of flooding in New York are clear, as with the impact of severe storms. The breach of a large dam could result in a loss of life, devastation of several communities, and flooding that spans multiple counties. Even a small dam failure could result in significant economic consequences for residents. Municipalities in the state likelihood of severe storms and flooding is predicted to increase dramatically with climate change. In many places, 100 years are likely to become 10-year floods by mid-century.
The Center for Urban Future reports that more than 1.2 million jobs in the state, about 12% of the state's workforce, could be largely automated using technology that exists today. In the Capital Region, 72,000 jobs are highly automatable. Some of the Capital Region's largest companies have invested in automation, including GE, Global Foundries, and Dumbstruck. Those most at risk are fast food workers, accounting and bookkeeping clerks, mail clerks, and people who drive tractor trailers, delivery trucks, and buses. The report explains that these jobs will not necessarily disappear in the face of automation, but the nature of the jobs will likely change.
The New York Times reports that Jalal Mansour Nuruddin, who helped establish the foundation for hip-hop as a member of The Last Poets in his own solo work, died on June 4th at a hospital in Atlanta. He was 73 years old. The cause was lung cancer, said Umar Ben Hazin, a fellow member of The Last Poets. In the early 1970s, Nuruddin befriended Hassan and others from Last Poets, a group with loose membership that had started in 1968 on Malcolm X's birthday. Nuruddin was affectionately known as the Godfather of Rap.
The Columbia County Department of Health says there's a confirmed case of Powassan virus, a tick-borne illness. The county tells News Channel 13, this is the first case of Powassan in Columbia County and that the patient is recovering well. Powassan virus is a rare viral disease that can cause symptoms ranging from flu-like symptoms to life-threatening inflammation of the brain. The Department of Health is reminding people to take steps to protect themselves from ticks and tick-borne illness.
This Saturday in Albany's Clinton Avenue between Henry Johnson Boulevard and Lexington Avenue will be named in honor of Abby Lee Brace. Helped create and pioneer various community organizations in Arbor Hill, including the Albany County Urban League, NAACP, the Albany County Methadone Clinic, the Albany County Lead Poisoning Screening, the Albany County Clinic, the St. Peter's Family and Health Clinic, Capital District Psychiatric Center, the Albany Boxing League, the South End Drill Team, the Sheridan Hollow Homeless Network. The ceremony will take place at 11:30 Saturday morning at the corner of Clinton Avenue and Henry Johnson Boulevard. Family is asked to wear blue and yellow. I'll just say this. A lot of people stand on Miss Abilene Brace's shoulder. I am one of it, and I'm proud of it. Rest in peace, Miss Brace. And finally, the Hamilton Hill Arts Center is holding its 18th annual Juneteenth celebration on Friday, June 15th, to commemorate the end of slavery and the beginning of the road to freedom for all Americans. The free event begins Friday evening at 5:30 p.m. at the Ancestral Burial Ground in Vail Cemetery in Schenectady and continues on Saturday at 1 p.m. in Schenectady Central Park. This event will include performances by the gospel group Restored and Ill Funk and others, a health fair, pony rides, food crafts, and workshops.
For those of you just tuning in, you're listening to WOOC's Hudson Mohawk Magazine on 105.3 FM. To learn more about this program and how to support the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org. If you have comments, suggestions, or juicy gossip, you can text us at 518-888-3004.
Next up, we have Hudson Mohawk Magazine correspondent Mark Dunlea with the news.
Capital District climate activists have been working to get local governments to create a community choice aggregation program to lower rates and promote clean renewable energy. The city of Albany is considering a resolution to formally explore the idea, and several other local communities are also looking into the program, which has the support of the state government. WOOC talks with Albany County Legislator Bill Reinhart before a recent informational meeting at the Albany Unitarian Church.
We're talking with Bill Reinhart, who's a member of the Albany County Legislature and also involved with Solarize Albany. Bill is part of a group that's looking to set up a community choice aggregation system here in the Capital District to get, you know, local residents to purchase their electricity cooperatively, collectively together. Bill, could you maybe just give us a brief explanation? What is community choice aggregation?
Well, think of it as an alternative to buying your energy supply from National Grid or whoever your local utility is. They are right now the default supplier of your power, unless you choose to go with someone else. And what CCA does is it allows, through state law and regulation, it allows municipalities to choose a different supplier. That would be what's called an ESCO, or an energy service company, and a CCA, or community choice aggregation aggregator, whose job it is, part of their job, once they are hired by the municipality, is to go out and purchase the supply that the town and its residents basically want. And what we are doing in the Capital District, the steering committee that Mark alluded to, is we want to see a CCA that is based on renewable energy. And we believe we can not only lower everyone's electric bill, but we can be green, reduce the carbon footprint of the community, which we all think is important. And it also allows the community to have more control over the energy supplies that we consume in our community.
Now, CCA is apparently a relatively new to New York. I guess Westchester down in that area has started the first one. Why CCAs at this point in time?
Well, really, I would say that it's been directed by state policy decision makers and the Public Service Commission, as well as elected officials at the state, who are trying to figure out, given the challenge of climate change, how does New York State reduce the carbon footprint of its economy? And this is one of the approaches that has kind of risen as a way to get a good economy of scale and help accomplish that goal. And let me just give one example of something else that has been done and is encouraged by the state. I've been participating through Solarize Albany in an effort to get people to put solar on their homes or to participate in community solar projects, or also known as solar farms. And the difference between the Solarize efforts and the CCA effort is that in Solarize, it's what's called an opt-in program, where an individual chooses to sign up as an individual to get that solar panel on their roof, which I've done, and it's very economical for me. Or you can participate in a community solar project if, let's say, you're a renter or you don't have enough good roofs, roof situation. And members of Solarize Albany have done both, and they're saving money doing that. But it's a slow process of essentially, think of it as a one-at-a-time people choosing to participate this way. What CCA does is it allows communities to go into this as an opt-out program so that the entire community is getting that power that the CCA administrator procures. And in our case, what we're working towards in the Capital District and other places are as well around the state, is to purchase green power, whether it's solar or renewable, wind or small hydro. There are various sources of renewable energy that are available. And so the difference is the power of the marketplace to get less expensive power by buying it in bulk. And that's what you can do with CCA even more than you can with Solarize. In the Solarize model, you can do that, but it's not nearly the same scale, so it's not the same economic benefit in terms of lowering the average cost of power for everyone that participates in the program.
Now, probably a fair number of people, you know, have selected their options through the utility company to sign it up, I guess, with ESCOs, where you can purchase, you know, 100% clean energy. but often that's a little bit more expensive than what you're getting from the local utility. Is the reason why a CCA able to produce costs, reduce costs, is because they have many more customers involved?
Well, it's not really so much that. What I would say is you have to think about it in two ways. One is there is a scale benefit or an economy of scale, as I mentioned. But also, the goal of the community choice aggregation effort isn't just to go on the market and buy what are called renewable energy credits, or RECs, which is what the, I won't name them, but the green marketers who you can buy power from them, you can sign up for 100% green. You pay more than you do for regular power typically, because what you're doing is you're buying essentially regular power and you're adding a renewable energy credit cost to that. And I've been doing that, frankly, for about 20 years now, even before I got my solar panels. And it always kind of frustrated me because I'm paying extra for that green power when there were times when in the wholesale markets, natural gas-fired generation, for example, would be more expensive than solar, but you're still paying that fixed rate plus the renewable energy credit. So that kind of upset me a little bit when I realized what was going on. And so what happens with community choice aggregation is we are encouraging, or I should say we have the option, and every community has this option, to encourage locally based and locally sourced renewable energy. That's where you get the true savings compared to what I will call the green ESCO model of buying conventional power on the market and then adding a REC charge, a renewable energy credit charge, to it. When you're buying that green power directly at scale, that's where you get the true savings.
So what has to happen, you know, here in the Capital District to get a CCA up and operating?
Well, we're going through the process now as the steering committee, and we are basically, I'd say, doing two things. On one track, we are learning everything we can about the marketplace, about how the program works, any changes that we see that might be coming down the pike from either the state law or the Public Service Commission. We're always looking out for opportunities that NYSERDA, the New York Energy Research and Development Authority, might be making available to help facilitate CCA developments. But at the same time, we are reaching out to communities, and hopefully this radio show will help in that process, reaching out to communities to identify those that are interested in working with us to implement CCA in their towns and in their cities. And I can say, I don't think I'm letting the cat out of the bag, but we've had conversations with people in the city of Albany, in Bethlehem, in New Scotland, in a couple of the hill towns. Niskayuna is showing interest, Glens Falls is showing interest, Saratoga is showing interest. There are several communities that we are optimistic we will be able to bring on board. And once we bring anywhere near those communities on board, we are going to get to that economy of scale that we're aiming at, which is about between 40,000 and 80,000 resident bill payers, whether they're renters or homeowners, that would allow us to really get the economy of scale that we're looking to achieve.
And if any of our listeners go, hey, this sounds like a good idea, how could they get involved? What could they do to make this happen?
Well, obviously, the most important thing in this process is for the towns to come on board. And there are specific steps that are required under state guidelines for municipalities to participate. It has to do with passing certain local resolutions and other things. So ultimately, what's going to matter is that in every community where we hope to accomplish this, there will need to be basically citizens who stand up at their town board meeting or their city hall meetings and say, we want this. We care about the environment. We care about lowering our bills. We can do both under the CCA program as envisioned by the Capital District Steering Committee. And so everybody who participates by speaking out and saying, this is what we want, we care about this issue, that's going to help the process move forward.
So we're almost out of time. I know that the CCA effort monthly meeting is not going to happen during the summer. Is there a phone number people can contact people at? For more information, you can contact Solarize Albany, www.solarizealbany.org, 518-328-4SUN. That's 518-328-4SUN. Well, we want to thank Bill Reinhart, Albany County Legislature, member of Solarize Albany, for joining us here today. And this was Mark Dunley with WOOC.
That was WOOC's report on the efforts to start community choice irrigation in the Capital District to lower electric rates and to promote clean energy.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine on WOOC 105.3 FM. In our next segment, H. Bosch Jr. brings you the Triple E's: education, empowerment, and entrepreneurship.
This week, I had the honor and pleasure. I sat down with Celeste Guthrie Hightower, loving mom, wife, author of Big Baby for Jesus, the number one children and teens education book on Amazon. One, two, three. Hello again, everyone. This is H. Bosch Jr. in the Triple E segment, Education, Empowerment, Entrepreneurship. Today's guest is Celeste Hightower, author of newly released Christian book, Big Baby for Jesus, and actually ranked number one new release in Christian and teens on Amazon. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, wow. It is a pleasure having you here. So as I say before I always start my shows, let's make it do what it do, and when it's done, it's done. All right. What made you decide to write a children's book?
Well, I'm the youngest girl of five kids, and I did a lot of foster parenting, and so I've always been around kids. I would arguably say that I am the favorite aunt. Unless one of my sisters is willing to gnaw my ear off for it,
okay.
I'm undefeated.
I gotcha. Undefeated. All right. I like that. And why a Christian book specifically?
Well, I figure we are all born sinners. The best time to instill godly principles is when kids are most impressionable. You train up a child in the way that you go, and they won't depart.
Amen, amen. So how did you come up with Big Baby for Jesus? I love that phrase.
Well, I actually coined that name, Big Baby, on my job about 4 years ago. I used to go home and make these, like, silly home videos where I would be in my daughter's playpen making these songs about Big Baby, and it just kind of ran from there. The rest
wow.
is history.
It is so unique, and I love that name. So what do you want children to come away with after reading Big Baby for Jesus?
That there's always a good way to handle a situation. You know, I have a super Holy Spirit in the book, and it's kind of like a superhero that mm-hmm. comes to the rescue and gets inside the children's ear when they're getting a little mischievous and tells them the right thing to do. So there's always a way out and the right way to do things, and typically the way to do things is based on biblical principles.
Absolutely, absolutely. I totally agree there. So if you had to describe Big Baby as a character, who is she?
She is a busy girl. She gets into a lot of different things.
Okay.
I actually made her a little bit taller than everyone else purposely. Mm-hmm. The reason behind that is because of self-image. I want children to grow up with some confidence in their self-image and realizing that we can be different, but God loves us the same.
Excellent. That's another point I totally agree with. Any plans for more books in the future? I know.
Oh, yeah.
I know.
Yeah,
yes.
Definitely.
I mean,
definitely.
I'm just going to say this. You are so talented, and I know this is just the beginning, and this is truly your season for God's grace and favor. So I know I'm looking forward to the next one.
Thank you.
Yeah. Now, since the book came out, have you gotten any feedback from parents or children?
Oh, yes. One of my absolute favorite feedbacks is a little boy. He sent me kind of like a little home video, and his mom is going back and forth with him. And she says, "You got your Big Baby book. How do you like it? Are you happy? Do you like Big Baby?" And he goes, "You know I do." So that's my favorite.
Say that. We got to get that on
I got
tape.
The video. Oh,
okay.
I do. Oh, I have to
good,
give it to
good.
You.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
adorable.
I got to post that. He says, "You know I do."
Yes.
Oh, that is priceless. Wow. So how does your family feel about the book?
Well, my husband's very proud, obviously. My daughter said 10 out of 10 would read again. Mm-hmm. So I take that as a compliment because she's a girl that's in pharmacy school. Right. I would love to say she got that intelligence from me, but I'm going to give credit to my mom.
Okay. Well, you know, we're going to get there. Well, definitely, we're going to get there. Apples don't fall far from the tree. Your mom, my sister, but we're going to end out with that. Yes. All right. Because she talked to me about 45 minutes about, you know, everybody and everything. So bless her heart.
Yes.
So can I ask, why is Big Baby wearing roller skates?
Well,
that's real interesting.
Yes, she is wearing roller skates. I have a younger daughter that skates throughout the entire house. So I got a lot of scuffed up floors. I used to try to stop it, but it actually, she's so determined to skate in the house that it's actually really fun to watch now. Mm. Before it was like, hey, Grace, you don't belong in the skates, but mm-hmm. she's so fast and she's all around the table. I mean, she could work for Sonic, you know?
look, trust me, she will soon. Yeah, it's coming, yeah. Wow. So let me just interject something and then we'll close out with the last couple of questions. For those of you tuning in, this is H. Bosch Jr., WOOC 105.3 FM, Troy, New York. Today's guest is author Celeste Hightower of Big Baby for Jesus. So now let me go right back in and close this out. Should we be expecting any new book titles in the near future?
That's definitely my goal, is to have a Big Baby for a series. Mm-hmm. The next book that I have in line is going to be Big Baby Birthday Bash.
So, Big Baby Birthday Bash.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow. Okay. So now let me say a few things. One is I want you to know that I am so proud of you. I truly believe that this is your season for God's favor and God's grace and favor. Apples don't fall far from the tree. Shout out to my sister and your mom. She has did a tremendous job with all of you guys.
Yes, yes.
You know, and she should really pat herself on the back and the shoulder each and every day, because when I look at you and I look at the foundation and the spirit that all of you have, and your sister and your brothers, and how you guys, before you're anything, you are successful human beings. And that's why God continues to bless you.
Thank you.
Let me just ask you a few more questions, then we'll close it out. How can people reach you?
They can, if they want to look out for the book, they can look out for the book on Amazon. It's on Amazon and Kindle.
Okay.
Under Big Baby for Jesus.
Okay.
Could also look it up under my name.
Great. Now, we're going to have you back, because I know you're going to blow up. All right?
All right.
And I know where to get you, because you're family. So, all right?
That's right.
I'm not going to be making 2 or 3 phone calls to get you.
I'm not running.
All right, good then. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate you. God bless you. And I just want to say, I love you. God loves you. And it ain't nothing you can do about it.
That's all right.
All right. Shout out to my engineer, Jonah. As always, thank you so much. Thanks, Jonah. All right. So let me end by saying, all right, until next time, it's about the triple E's: education, empowerment, entrepreneurship. And remember this, don't hear about making a difference. You need to be about making a difference. This is Inez Bosch's baby boy, H. Bosch Jr., doing what I'm made to believe. Thanks to Miss Guthrie Hightower for an awesome interview.
For those just tuning in, I'm Guy Schaefer.
And I'm H. Bosch Jr. You're listening to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine on WOOC 105.3 FM, Troy, New York.
To learn more about the Hudson Mohawk Magazine program, to listen online, and to learn how to support the Sanctuary for Independent Media, check us out online at mediasanctuary.org. If you have comments, suggestions, or if you need help identifying a spider, you can text us at 518-888-3004. Also, be sure to tune in 7 to 10 weeknights for Jazz Sanctuary, a wonderful celebration of all that is creative, dedicated to supporting jazz in the Hudson Mohawk region.
Throughout this academic year, many young people have contributed to their voices to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine. In this end of the school youth segment, we express our gratitude to Ormarian Skipworth, Marcela Sanchez, and Malaysia Jones, Trayvon Valtrin, Lauren Wilson, Jada McDeal, Ty Goyer, Seth Bulsan, and Thomas LeBoy by listening to some gems of their time on the radio. Priceless.
Hi, my name is Omarion Skipworth, one of the NBAK brothers at PS12. I'm here to talk to you about My Brother's Keeper, what it's about, what we do, and the reasons why we do it. NBK is what's called My Brother's Keeper, and we help out kids who struggles and who go through things that we go through, but don't really have somebody there to talk with them and help them.
This is Malaysia. I'm now here at School 12 with the 9th grade girls, Brianna, Anijah, and Marcelina. Now tell us about your trip to Boston.
So my favorite part on the Boston trip was probably like walking around and being in a different environment.
Hey, I'm Ty. I'm a teenage musician here in New York. I play guitar, electric bass, cello, piano, flute, and drums, and I sing. Get out there in the world with showing people some music that shows passion and true, like, emotion.
I started writing when I was in, like, sixth grade, and pretty much how it went was my friend that I had just met, you know, coming into the high school, or the middle school, she had been writing these journals about, you know, fan fiction. She was talking about One Direction, and I read it, and I was like, oh my gosh, that's so cool, and I was like, I could write like that. And then suddenly I went home that day and I just started writing. And I pretty much started with fan fiction, suddenly got obsessed with like stupid things like that. And then I got more into deeper stuff when I started reading books and started working on like short stories that kind of got dark. So I don't know, that's just pretty much how I started.
I just want the community to be cleaner, people to notice their actions before they do it. When people throw stuff in water, what animals are you polluting? When you throw wraps from your soda cans and your cans in the water, you're polluting other animal environments. They have to live there. People should just know what they're doing before they do it. Think of the consequences.
Why did you come to the Poor People's Campaign?
I'm very interested in knowing more about the historical Poor People's Campaign and about how we can be part of the one that's starting up here. And because my daughter's in town and thought this could be something that we could do together and for justice.
So last year and this year, I was a big part of like organizing the Women's March in Greenfield, Massachusetts, and also like organizing racial justice vigils on Saturdays for my school and like the mass slavery apology in Greenfield and Amherst, Massachusetts.
I remember you. She went to the same school as me in Troy Prep.
We're basically just like recording because like I'm into a lot of activist stuff and I'm actually do the BLM thing, Black Lives Matter, and hang out and we talk about like what we can do. And then our school did this national walkout.
Yeah.
So when she told us about this, I was just like, I'm on board to come. So yeah.
At the end of the day, if I was an artist, I would just want my music to be heard. It doesn't matter if I'm getting paid or not, because at the end of the day, I could put money in my own pockets. I don't need music to put money in my pockets. So as long as people are listening to it and they can feel it, I don't care how they get it. And the people that support me enough to actually buy it, hey, thank you.
In Troy, they closed the pool down because over the summer, people trashed it. You know, Troy didn't have the money to pay for it, so they would just... I went to the meeting, actually, and...
Where was it?
It was at City Hall. The mayor of Troy, he spoke, and he just said...
Did you go with your family?
I went with my mom, yeah.
Oh, cool.
Mm. And basically, he was saying that he was going to turn the water on and the chlorine for the pools, but if they were trashed, then why waste all the money to call people to clean it out and then have to pay for it to get turned on?
Did you and your mom respond to that in any way or have any other ideas for how to get swimming in the summertime for people in Troy?
Actually, I didn't really go much swimming last year, you know, because the pool was up the hill from me, so that was the only pool I really went to.
You're talking about the one right down here in South
yes.
Troy? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we didn't really go swimming last year. We stayed in the house. It was a boring summer.
A lot of mental health issues also tie in with things like bullying in schools. And a lot of students, they might have similar viewpoints on things going on in the world, in our classrooms, and might be able to connect to each other with like what's going on at home or what's going on just in our heads. And being able to talk to other people and maybe create a bond and start friendships that you could have never even thought about by just understanding each other. Poetry is an expression of like everything that's happening. Or me with music, I always plan ahead with things, and I see that as a career, and it gives me hope towards the future, and it's always my reminder to there's always going to be things that will be better in the world if you just keep going on. And like my best friend always used to say, stay strong, for tomorrow will be a better day.
And the day I know who my real friends are, and thanks to MBK, I have real friends.
That was from Seth Busson. Thank you for being able to share that with us.
Thank you for having me on.
I feel like if you're with people every day, and you want to be a part of their group, you should build a family type of relationship with them. You should be able to trust them. You should be able to come to them if you need help. And there should be a mutual respect, a mutual trust, a mutual bond.
This is Malaysia signing off. Have a nice day.
We express our gratitude to the youth we just heard from. In the last segment, Omarion Skipworth, Marcelina Sanchez, Malaysia Jones, Trayvon Voltron, Lauren Wilson, Jada McNeil, Ty Goyer, Seth Busan, and Thomas LeBoy.
Next, Hudson Mohawk Magazine Labor Talk host and roaming correspondent Willie Terry attended one of the New York Nurses' statewide Days of Action rally for safe staffing in Albany at the state capitol Monday, June 11th, where they were pushing for passage of the Safe Staffing for Quality Care Act. He spoke to the organizer of the rally, Corey Ellis, political coordinator for Upstate New York Nurses Association, and various participants and speakers at the rally.
I'm here with Corey Ellis. You're the...
I'm political director for New York State Nurses Association.
Oh, okay. But you're also something else.
Yes, right? I'm president of Albany Common Council.
Right. Okay. What was the purpose of the Safe Staff rally today?
Well, the purpose is... nurses in hospitals throughout all New York State have been burdened with too many patients. And right now, we want our state to pass a law with RNs to patient ratios. They did it in California. It saved hospitals millions and millions of dollars. We're at a point where our nursing people don't want to go to the nursing profession because other nurses tell nurses, you don't want to do this because it's unsafe. And so what we want, the Safe Patient Staff Act, would help with that and help alleviate nurses having 10 to 12 patients at one time throughout our hospitals and our nursing homes.
Now, what is the provision of the Safe Staff Quality Care Act?
That is it. It's the same. It is basically the state would set numbers of RNs to patient in certain departments. Right now, there's no formula. There's nothing. So hospitals believe they can move nurses around. They always tell us that hospitals are staffed adequately. But they don't say we have nurses working 14-hour days, 15-hour days, they don't have enough nurses to work in those facilities. And also, we're sending a message with the Safe Quality Care Act is about that an RN is just not an RN. Too many times hospitals feel they can just move RNs from unit to unit to unit without the training that they need, and we that cannot happen any longer. We need to make sure that our patient's safety comes first, and passing this bill would guarantee that.
Okay. Now, why is it important that this act pass now as opposed to, last year? Why is it important?
Well, it's been important every year. It's been important for the last, I think, it seems like they've been doing this for 20 years. So it's important. Every year it's important to pass it. But we feel right now it's needed, and nurses can't wait any longer.
Okay. So what is the major opposition that is preventing this act from being passed?
Well, it was passed in the Assembly. Our senators seem we have 36 senators on the bill. So we have the majority in both houses on the bill. We have 102 Assembly members on the bill. We have 30. So that's the majority in each house. It's up to the leadership to allow that to come out of those committees and go to the floor for a vote.
Now, what could, individual communities do to help get this passed?
Well, it is calling their elected officials. We say call it all elected officials. Call the Speaker Flanagan. Call Assembly, Majority for the Senate, Senator Flanagan. Call Speaker Assembly Member Carl Hastie and ask them to allow his members to vote for that on the floor. Once again, I said we have the majority on the bill. There's a majority who've already sponsored this bill. It just needs to get to the floor to be voted on. And that's what we're asking. We're asking for a floor vote. And it will alleviate the stress and strain that these RNs feel for their patients every single day when they go to hospitals and not adequately staffed.
Okay. Is there anything else you would like to say tell our radio audience about this issue?
I would like to people to understand when you go to a hospital and you wonder why you don't see anybody for a long time, a nurse, this is why. Because they're caring for so many patients, they can't spend that time with that one patient, with your mother, your father, your grandparent, your aunt, your uncle, even your children. So when you go to a hospital and you wonder why you don't see a nurse, this is why. Because the hospitals are not adequately staffed. With this bill, it will force them to do what they should have always done, put patients first, and that way RNs can spend more time at the bedside rather than having 12 different patients that they can't spend that quality time with.
Thank you, Cora.
Thank you.
Your name?
Oh, my name is Oliver Yaho.
And your name?
My name is Rachel.
Myla. Roselle.
And all y'all are nurses?
Yes. Yes, at Albany Medical Center.
Oh, you at Albany Medical Center?
Yes, all of us.
Oh, okay. So what was the purpose of the rally today?
Oh, the purpose of this rally today is to let our lawmakers hear our voices to pass this bill to safe staffing, because safe staffing saves life. It's not only for us, but it's only for everybody, even you and your family.
So what have been some of the problems on the job, you know, because of understaffing?
Being understaffed, I tell you, it's really dangerous. It's dangerous for everybody, for you, for the patients, for the family, and for us too, as staff, as nurses, okay? So that's why we are trying to let our lawmakers pass this bill.
In California, it's already passed. So how about New York? Why can't it be passed in New York, right?
And, you know, the opposition, the reason why this law could hardly be passed because of money, profit. Okay, profit, this is the main cause. But if you think about lives, this should be passed.
What are the hospital administrators and stuff, are they in support of y'all getting more staff?
Hospital administrators? Yeah. Of course, they have the opposition, because if they will, if this safe staffing pass into law, they might lose money, profits. Okay, so they're kind of against this law.
So how do y'all feel that the rallying and whatever other things y'all doing, that you feel that the legislature going to pass this act this year?
We are hoping that it will help.
We are hoping that they will be challenged to listen to us, to hear our voice,
and
pass the bill.
Yeah, mind you, we worked 12 hours last night. We have no sleep because we believe that this is so important for everybody, for our patients and for everybody. We came here to do the rally and to make our voices be heard by these lawmakers whom we put our trust to them to save or to protect our lives too, you know. It's just a vote yes. I don't know why, what's the reason behind it, that they are against it, but they have to pass it now. We can't wait for another month, another year.
Say, is there anything y'all would like to say to the community?
Yeah, for our community, please, call your representative, call your assemblyman, help them, help us let these voices be heard, because it is for us. This law is for everybody, for New Yorkers, okay?
All right, thank you.
People before profits! People before profits! People before profits! People before profits!
Thank you. We stand here today to say that we need this bill on the floor now!
Woo!
Right? Our babies can't wait. Our mothers can't wait. Our senior citizens cannot wait for this bill to pass, because it's about patients before profit. It's about making sure that our New Yorkers are healthy. It's about making sure our nurses can be with their patients. And most importantly, it's not about the healthcare executives, right?
No.
Not about the hospital's profits, right?
Right.
Not about the donors. It's about our New Yorkers. So let's get this to the floor and let's get it done now.
Yep.
Because New York needs the passage of safe staffing now.
My name is Cheryl Gumabay, and I was an immigrant from the Philippines in 2012, and I am now an American citizen.
Yes!
Passed into law because we nurses can no longer be comfortable with uncomfortable and unsafe working conditions. If this is passed into law, then this would boost our morale to be our best every time we go to work. Quality of care we render to our patients, which they rightfully deserve. And in the same manner that we also deserve quality and safe staffing.
Crystal People Stokes, I represent the great city of Buffalo.
In the district of
But this is not an issue just about Buffalo. This is an issue about the entire state of New York, from the West Coast to the East Coast, from the North to the South. This is about all of us, because all of us need exactly that, a good nurse who has support that can we can depend on when we our loved ones or ourselves are in the hospital. I'll be honest with you, I really don't like hospitals. But I will go into a hospital if there's a loved one there, because I know you all are understaffed. And there's some things that I can do for that person, not clinical, but supportive, that I have to be there. And there are many families like that in New York State who feel like they cannot take a person to the hospital and leave them, that they have to stay with them because they understand that the nurses are understaffed and the doctors may only come in once a day. So you cannot depend on them. You have to depend on the nurses. And so I thank you for us being able to depend on you. I thank you for choosing this as a career because it's a choice. I'm gonna just be honest, full disclosure, I couldn't do what you all do. I appreciate you and I honor you. Thank God for you. And I was happy to take that vote back in 2016, and I'm happy to take it again.
She's the director, Matt London. Where's Matt? Oh, there
he is. Hey, thanks, Corey. It's great to be here. The previous speakers have done a spectacular job talking about how safe staffing is critical for patient care. I'm with Northeast New York Coalition for Occupational Safety and Health. Our slogan, as the banner says, is safe jobs for all. They face risks of infection from needle sticks. They face the risk of HIV, of hepatitis. They face serious risks from moving and transporting patients of back injuries and shoulder injuries. They face, as we very tragically heard a few minutes ago, risks of workplace violence, of being assaulted. All three of those types of hazards are increased when there's not enough nurses.
Right.
They're all increased. So it's imperative that the Senate and the Assembly pass this legislation.
Yeah. We need your help. We have to get it through the Assembly, Health Committee, and on the floor of the Assembly, get it voted on, and then bring it to the Senate floor and do that. We need your help. We need your loud voice to get it done. Get it done this year. We've worked hard and long on this bill. Years. This is the right thing to do. We need your help. Don't let it go. It's time. Thank you.
That was WOOC roaming labor correspondent Willie Terry covering the Nurses Safe Staffing Rally, calling for passage of the Safe Staffing for Quality Care Act in New York. Last night, the New York Civil Liberties Union hosted an expert panel and public discussion to highlight a number of civil liberty concerns that have arisen in Rensselaer County. WOOC correspondent and ACLU staffer Dan Pfeiffer spoke to the panelist Zachary Ahmad about the controversial 287G program.
So the 287G program is a program that exists under federal law that allows local law enforcement agencies to enter into agreements whereby local law enforcement officers are deputized to perform federal immigration enforcement actions, which they would normally not be their job and would normally be the job of the federal government. So you have local law enforcement officers who have been hired or appointed or elected to enforce local criminal laws, instead enforcing civil immigration laws under the direct supervision of ICE. There have historically been two different models of 287G. One is the task force model, which had been phased out, wherein law enforcement officers in the field would be enforcing immigration law the way ICE agents would when they're working in the field. And then there's the jail model, wherein it's corrections officers in the jail who are deputized to enforce immigration law against people who have been taken into custody in those jails. And it's that jail enforcement model that the Rensselaer County Sheriff's Office has entered into.
My understanding is New York Civil Liberties Union is opposed to this practice. I mean, what are some reasons that we might be concerned about 287G?
Well, there are a lot of reasons. First, fundamentally, we do believe that immigration enforcement should remain the job of the federal government, and that local law enforcement should not entangle themselves in the task of immigration enforcement. It's not something that local law enforcement agencies are well equipped to do. And it's not something that the kind of minimal training that you get in a 287G program is going to equip them to do. But more importantly than that, having a 287G program spreads fear among immigrant communities that their local law enforcement are working hand in hand with immigration authorities, and that any kind of contact with local law enforcement could lead to their deportation. That's the fear that is created when you have this kind of systematic cooperation between local law enforcement and ICE. And so what we've seen in other areas is that immigrant communities are less likely to report crimes or to cooperate with investigations or to see local law enforcement as a resource that they can rely on to serve them as they should be serving them, and instead are fearful that local law enforcement will, again, that a contact with local law enforcement will be the first step down the path of deportation. And you see that fear not just in communities of undocumented immigrants, but even in communities of immigrants with lawful status, simply because they know that their local law enforcement does have this kind of agreement with ICE.
As someone who is a U.S. citizen who doesn't get profiled by police, I've seen sheriffs around town, and every time I see them, I think of 287G and how they're getting trained to work with ICE.
I will note that under 287G, under the agreement that the Rensselaer County Sheriff's Office has signed, it's going to be two corrections officers who are actually going to be deputized to be working as de facto ICE agents in the jail. But one of the concerns that we have about 287G is that having it in place creates this culture in the broader law enforcement community that sends a message. It spreads fear, but it also sends a message to local law enforcement that immigration enforcement is part of what law enforcement in this area do. It has been noted in other counties that have 287G agreements, you've seen an uptick in incidents of racial profiling. You've seen examples of where the ethnicity of the people who are, say, picked up for minor traffic violations is much more of a factor because you've created this culture that is working hand-in-hand with immigration enforcement.
It seems like one part of a larger climate of fear that is coming from the very highest parts of government. Immigrant communities are being made to feel unsafe in all sorts of ways, and the sheriff is seemingly adding to that problem.
Right, you have an overall climate of fear that is created by the Trump administration and the kind of immigration enforcement priorities that the Trump administration has brought to bear. The administration has made very clear that any immigrant who is in the country without lawful status is deportable and could be a target for deportation, doing away with some of the priorities that might have been in place in prior years. And so with the 287G agreement, you've got the local sheriff's office essentially agreeing to pursue those same enforcement priorities that the Trump administration has laid out. And in fact, the agreement that the sheriff's office signed makes clear that it is ICE's enforcement priorities that will direct how those enforcement operations happen in the jail.
I feel like there's a lack of checks on county sheriffs. As far as I understand, they operate basically independently. Is the only recourse for people who are concerned about this is to vote them out? What are some things that people can do?
So I think there are several ways that the community can get involved and help fight back against the 287G agreement that's been put in place. So the 287G agreement has already been signed, but the county could decide to withdraw from it at any point. Sheriff Russo is an elected official. He is an elected sheriff, and the sheriffs should be held accountable to the concerns of their community. They should be taking the concerns of the community into account. And so, yes, bringing that kind of pressure on the sheriff is one way that residents of Rensselaer County can show their disapproval and they can make 287G an issue in the next sheriff's election.
That was Zachary Ahmad, New York Civil Liberties Union Policy Council, followed by public comments from local residents Nora McDonald, Cheryl Clark, and Alexander Ferreira. That concludes our show. We hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Hudson Mohawk Magazine. I'm H. Bosch Jr. with a gnat in front of my face. I'm trying to get out.
And I'm Guy Schaefer. That interview about 287G is just part one of a two-part interview. The second part should be available on the website. I'm Guy Schaefer. Remember to tune back in tomorrow and every weekday at 7 a.m., 9 a.m., and 6 p.m. to get your daily dose of local news. You can also get that dose through our Hudson Mohawk Magazine podcast and Facebook page. Also, be sure to tune in 7 to 10 weeknights for Jazz Sanctuary, a wonderful celebration of all that is creative, dedicated to supporting jazz in the Hudson Mohawk region.
As a reminder, WOOC 105.3 is produced by local volunteers. If you're interested in volunteering with our radio effort, shoot us an email at info@mediasanctuary.org or just stop by one of our weekly meetings on Monday nights at 7:07 p.m. held right here at the Sanctuary for Independent Media. Until next time, folks, thanks for tuning in.